It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national, and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. And here's the man that does that so well, Mitchell Dye.
And good morning. Here we are post-election on 94.7 The Pulse. A big thanks to Liz and Kate and Will and Phil and the entire team there for breakfast this morning. Great program once again. And some of those ethical questions that they were posing are a really good way to get your mind going on a Monday morning. That's just what everyone needs at 10 minutes to 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, last week when we vacated the studios on Tuesday, I said I thought that Malcolm Turnbull would be back. He'd be in majority government. He would have a reduced majority, of course, but he would be back. Now it looks like it could be a hung parliament as the seats in doubt increases. We're not going to have any lower house seats counted today. The count will continue tomorrow, says the AEC. But locally, I said that I thought Sarah Henderson would win, and she did. And, of course, Richard Marles, I thought that he would win, and that was pretty much a foregone conclusion. But there's been a few different issues at play, and I'm looking forward to getting into them. But I was sort of hoping that we'd be able to come back this week and maybe talk about state issues or something else and move away from federal politics. But no, it's on, and we'll have to keep an eye on the results as they start to come through. But in the studio with me now is Christine Cousins, who is, of course, the member for Geelong. State issues, of course, so very separate to federal. We might touch on federal issues as well. How have you been, Christine?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well, and very happy about the results in lots of ways on Saturday.
Well, I mean, first of all, you must be happy that there was a swing to the Labor Party pretty much across the board. Even in Corangamite, I read that Sarah Henderson's hopeful that with a postal vote she'll get back to where she was, but it looks like there has still been a swing to Libby Coker.
Oh, most definitely, and it's, I think, about 1.2% it's sitting on at the moment. That may vary slightly with the counting of postal votes, but, you know, I think Libby Coker ran a great campaign. And I also think that it's, you know, a bit disturbing that the media is not giving Bill Shorten and the Labor Party the credit it deserves for winning the number of seats that they've won in one election. It's unprecedented. And I think the Australian people made a very strong vote on Saturday that they were not happy with the Liberal government.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think that Bill Shorten, he learned quickly on the job, and he really started to feel at home campaigning, and that whole Bill Bus thing, that looked very well organised, whereas Malcolm Turnbull maybe wasn't quite at home on the campaign. Like, for example, I noticed in that seat in Western Sydney, in Lindsay, he was going to do that shopping centre walk. That had to get cancelled, and there were sort of awkward situations like that. But at the same time, people always say that basically oppositions don't win elections, bad governments lose them. So do you think that's what's happened here?
Oh, look, I think that's got a lot to do with it. But I also think that Bill Shorten ran such a strong campaign in the community. He was out there doing the community hall meetings with people and talking to them about the issues that really mattered to them, which, of course, is health, education, jobs and the environment were the four key ones. And he did an amazing job in doing that. You know, I think Turnbull was too focused on other things that don't directly impact on people in our community, and that played out on Saturday night.
And were you out and about on Saturday on the hustings, you know, giving out how-to-vote cards and all that sort of thing? What was the response like from the voters as they went into the booths?
Yeah, I was out there most of the day, along with many other Labor supporters and members. And, you know, we were getting a feel then that the swing was on. It's difficult, though, to know just what sort of impact that's going to have. I think in Corio, Richard Marles was able to increase his vote. And I think it's interesting that in those areas where people were campaigning in relation to the CFA, we actually increased our vote. And I think that says it all, that the community are aware of the difference between state and federal issues, but they're also aware that a lot of the issues or the misinformation raised by the Liberal Party, because let's face it was the Liberal Party that were running that campaign with the CFA volunteers, sadly, you know, people were able to get the facts on what the impact meant for their community. And I think the majority of volunteers who play an enormous role in our community, we value all the work that they do, along with our career firefighters. But the misinformation that was put out there by the Liberal government was just appalling. And thankfully, a lot of those volunteers realised that it was a lot of misinformation. So in booths like Lara, for example, where there was quite a strong campaign for the CFA volunteers, and I'm not condemning them for that. They've got every right to campaign. My issue was that they were campaigning on the wrong information. And that was reflected at the ballot box in Lara, and Richard Males increased his vote there. I think it's interesting that in Corangamite, there was a backlash against the government in areas like Bannockburn and Meredith, where the CFA volunteers campaigned very strongly with the Liberal Party there, and Sarah Henderson lost up to 5 to 6% in those booths. So, you know, I think to take people for granted is wrong. We need to make sure, if you're going to make a decision, make it on an informed decision, not a decision that's full of misinformation.
Well, I want to run some of these claims past you, because obviously we've been speaking to a lot of people from the government on this program. Mm-hmm. We've also been speaking to Peter Marshall. So we're doing our best to try and speak to both sides.
Sure.
And it's a very confusing issue at times.
It is, yes.
But I just want to keep looking at just some of those issues, because you've spoken about some of the booths where there was perhaps a big swing against the Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you look at Victoria as an entire state, the swing to you guys was about 1%, whereas in New South Wales, Queensland, yep, it was a lot more. And people are saying, I watched on the election night coverage, for example, mm-hmm, on the ABC, that people were perhaps looking at your state government and voting against you, and that's why the swing wasn't bigger than what it was.
Well, the swing was 1.5%. And in Victoria is not the state that we need to win seats in. We're almost to capacity in terms of what seats we can win. And yes, we, you know, there was a possibility of winning Corangamite.
I mean, I thought when Libby Coker sort of became the pre-selected candidate, then I thought she was definitely going to be the next member for Corangamite.
Mm.
It was only sort of about 2 weeks ago where I thought, now it's actually firming up for Sarah Henderson.
Yeah, and look, it was always a tough job to win Corangamite. There's no doubt of that. We won it in 2007. When Stuart MacArthur retired. So that, you know,
well, he was voted out, wasn't he? I don't think
Stuart
he retired.
MacArthur.
I thought he was voted out by Darren Cheeseman.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Sorry. He was.
Forced retirement.
Yeah, forced retirement. So, you know, and that was a big election for Labor, obviously. Mm. We won in 2007 with Kevin Rudd. And we just hung on to it in the following election, of course. The election after that, Sarah Henderson won it. Corangamite is probably more of a conservative seat. People vote for Labor when they're not happy, and we know that. And we did have that 1.2% swing to Labor. I'm not saying the CFA issue didn't resonate right across Corangamite. It may well have done. What I'm saying is that where there were strong campaigns against Labor on the CFA issue, people voted against the government.
Like another issue, and this is not really connected to Geelong, but out in the southeast of Melbourne, you've got that whole Skyrail situation,
mm-hmm,
and there were signs at booths there that said Labor/Greens equals Skyrail. You had, mm-hmm, anti-Skyrail campaigners there, and we were seeing swings there against Labor of about 7% in some,
mm-hmm,
booths.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we've held those seats. So, you know,
well,
I mean,
Chisholm.
Well, that's still
in
on
play.
A knife's edge.
Yeah.
But that was always going to be difficult for Labor to hold anyway, I think. But look, you know, there are issues that will impact on people. People make their decision, you know, based on the facts, hopefully. I just think that not enough credit's been given to Bill Shorten and the Labor Party for picking up, 17 seats or something,
yeah,
in one election. It's unprecedented. And, you know, the Australian people are saying, this is what we want. We want to change. Whether it's the majority or not, we'll find out in the coming days and weeks. But, you know, it still may well be a hung parliament.
Yeah. Well, final question on that before we then jump into the CFA situation, and that is, before the election, Labor made a big deal about we're not going to do deals with the Greens. We're going to either form government in our own right or not at all. Do you think that was a mistake, now that if they did, for example, do a deal with Adam Bandt, that could give them an extra seat that may push them closer to that magic number of 76?
Yeah, look, I don't know what the thinking is at the moment. My understanding is that we said we wouldn't do a deal. As far as I'm aware, that's still as it sits. You know, I was listening to the commentary over the weekend about, you know, whether Labor should or shouldn't do a deal with the Greens or any of the independents. That sits with Bill Shorten and his team, and they'll make that decision. But as far as I'm aware, as of, you know, yesterday, Bill was talking to the Greens and the independents, sure, so was Malcolm Turnbull. But whether they go into an agreement with Labor, as far as I'm aware, that's not happening.
It seems to me that some people in your party, some of your supporters, say it would be good for Labor to do a deal with the Greens or get on better, because then we can use shared resources, where some people say, no, we need to have our own path and we need to be completely separate. Any thoughts there?
Oh, look, you know, clearly I would prefer that we're governing in our own right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, the CFA situation, I'll just run a few claims past you and you can talk about what's going on. But first of all, can you give us a snapshot of what actually is going on? So a few weeks out before the election, we heard that there was going to be this new deal and we heard a whole range of different impacts. So can you explain what happened there?
Look, you know, I just find this really extraordinary, the misinformation that's gone around about this agreement. Any employee, anybody that has a job and has an EBA, is entitled to negotiate their EBA. So let's make that clear right from the beginning. The CFA issue has blown out of proportion in relation to the EBA, as far as I'm concerned. Basically, what the government has said is that we need to provide communities that have built up as urban communities, like Lara, for example, like Torquay, who need integrated stations. So you can't just rely on the volunteer firefighters. They do an amazing job. There's no doubt about that. But they're volunteers. So for the response times to meet the demand in our urban centres, we need career firefighters in the stations to respond as required. Volunteers respond, of course they do, but for some of them, they've got to either get out of bed if it's the middle of the night, they've got to leave work, get to the station. So there's lots of demands on those volunteers outside of their volunteer firefighting. In areas like Lara, for example, huge influx of community. You know, the population has grown enormously. So the government is looking at an integrated station where you have volunteers and career firefighters. Same in Torquay. Huge population growth. We need volunteers and career firefighters. But out of the 1,200 volunteer stations, only 30-odd are going to be affected in terms of the integration. That's it. So for many of those communities out there who have been very upset about what they've been hearing, it's not going to impact on them at all. And for the suggestion that there's got to be seven career firefighters on board before volunteers can start fighting a fire is just ridiculous. No government is going to have volunteers standing back there waiting for seven career firefighters to arrive while a house burns down. That's just absurd. So that sort of information is just totally wrong. And I think, you know, people need to get a clearer picture about how it impacts on their community. And for the vast majority of communities across Victoria, there is no impact.
One of the main points I've seen that has been of concern to CFA volunteers, though, has been this idea that there's a right of veto, not just by the paid firefighters, but specifically paid firefighters that are in the union. So the union would be having more say about what they do as volunteers.
Yeah, no, that's just not true.
So
simply not true.
But where would someone get this idea from?
Well, I don't know where they've got the idea from, but if people look at the agreement that's on the table, the veto is simply incorrect.
But surely there must be some command chain there, because you're talking about integration between paid firefighters and volunteers.
Yes.
So presumably one has to have a say over the other. They can't just work completely independently, can they?
Yeah, but they have their hierarchy that manages all of that. There is no veto, and I don't know where that's come from, but there certainly is no veto.
And one thing I don't understand is, why did Jane Garrett have to resign, obviously, as the Emergency Services Minister? Because what was portrayed in the newspapers was that she was against this deal,
mm-hmm.
but if it's a harmless deal, why would she be against it?
Well, look, Jane did not have to resign. She chose to resign because she did not agree with the Premier. Now, that's her right to do that. You know, Jane was is a great person. She's a great Member of Parliament. Obviously, for whatever reason, she chose to resign because she didn't want to support the Premier on that particular issue. So, to be honest, I don't know why she did that, and she hasn't explained why, but that was a decision that she made.
It just seems confusing if people on your side are also disagreeing. Does it not logically follow that people out there in the community could also disagree, and that's what started this whole campaign?
Well, I think, you know, in saying that our people don't agree, one person didn't agree. The whole cabinet, the whole caucus agreed to go ahead with removing the board and moving on to change the culture within the CFA board.
And obviously the main thing that's been put out there, I know Sarah Henderson said this in our candidates forum, was that it's a takeover by the union, that the CFA was being taken over.
No, it's not a takeover. And, you know, as the Premier, as the Minister have said, we fully support the volunteer firefighters. There is, you know, we can't say it enough. I mean, I can't understand why, you know, people want to drive this wedge between the career firefighters and the volunteers. They both play a very significant role in our community. And I think, you know, I've spoken to many, many volunteers, and there are different positions. There's a group of volunteers that say, we're glad that that CFA board are gone. There needs to be a change of culture. All it's done is driven a wedge between career and volunteers. So there are a group of volunteers that are very clear about that. There's a group of volunteers that are concerned but understand that there needs to be, in our urban areas, more coverage. So the integration of stations is not an issue for them, but they're concerned about how it's going to roll out. And then there's a group of volunteers that no matter what you say, they're not going to listen to you anyway.
And the CFA board, some of them had to stand down, like Lucinda Nolan, mm-hmm. for example. What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, if they weren't supporting the government, then obviously it's their choice whether they stand down or not. And then we had the situation where Joe Buffone decided that he was going to resign, but then decided to send the minister an email saying, well, unless you give me an extra $85,000 a year and more, and just as much power as the CEO, I'm going to resign and make it even worse for you. So, you know, there's been a pretty bad culture within the CFA board, I believe. And in talking to volunteers, I'd certainly get that view as well.
And Sarah Henderson here said that if the government was re-elected, they would pass legislation through the Fair Work Act in order to prevent this from going through. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, legally they can't. I mean, every worker has a right to negotiate their EBA. And if the agreement is through the Fair Work Australia and the workers that are part of that EBA goes through, then nobody legally can change that. I mean, it's very clear. And if Malcolm Turnbull wants to start changing the Fair Work Act, which provides protection for workers through their EBA, then I think that's a big issue for the Australian people.
Now, and I want to move on to rate capping to finish off with. But before we do, are there any other things you'd like to clear up, any other claims you've heard out there in the community that you'd like to respond to?
Oh, look, I just think in relation to the CFA issue, people need to be clear about what the issues are and how it impacts on our community. And this is about community safety. This is about having integrated stations worked out. So in places like Lara and Torquay, which are the two stations in this region that will be integrated over a period of time, that those people living in that community can feel confident that they will have an adequate response time if they have an emergency or a fire.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving on to rate capping, that's come into force as of July 1, mm-hmm. from what I understand. Again, it's a policy that I think was the right move, given what we were seeing in certain mm. councils. And obviously Geelong, we had rates increases of about 5.6%, yes. yep. which is well and truly above inflation. What does this mean for Geelong residents now that we've obviously got administrators in place?
Well, nothing really changes. I mean, the rate capping is now in place. The administrators decided not to apply for that exemption, yep. which I think was the right thing to do. And I think it makes people feel a little bit more confident that they're not going to get a massive rate rise. But not only that, see their rates being used in such a way that is not in the best interest of the community. And, you know, I think that's the important issue here. We saw over a long period of time that money was being spent where, you know, you question whether that was appropriate or not. So I think, you know, the people of Geelong can feel a little bit more confident that they're actually not going to be getting these massive rate rises and seeing their rates used in, you know, inappropriate way.
Ironically, I noticed that the Christmas tree got the big tick.
Yes, I saw that. So, I mean, that had been ticked off by the council just prior to the dismissal. Mm. The administrators, their role was to look at how effective that was going to be over the next 3 years. Mm. And they have made the decision to leave it there because obviously they see that, you know, there is some benefit to having it there. But, you know, time will tell too.
Yep. Well, thank you very much for coming in. Hopefully when we catch up next month, we won't still be talking about federal issues, but there's a chance we could be back to the polls if we can't get a minority or majority government together. I know. It would be exhausting, wouldn't it?
Yes.
But hopefully next month we'll be able to get stuck into more state issues. Thank you mm-hmm. very much for coming in, and we'll catch
you.
Up in August.
Great. Thank you.
Good on you. Christine Cousins there, the member for Geelong in State Parliament. It's 25 minutes after 9. A break. More to come in a moment.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.